from Jeremiah chapter 29 verses 4 to 7 in Persian. خداوند قادر متعال خدای اسرائیل به همه شما که به خواست او از اورشلیم به بابل تبعید شده اید میفرماید خانه ها بسازید و در آن زندگی کنید، درختان بکاهید و از میوه‌اش بخورید، چون سالهای زیادی در آن خواهید بود. ازدواج کنید و صاحب فرزند شوید. بگذارید فرزندانتان هم ازدواج کنند و بچه دار شوند تا در آنجا تعدادتان افزوده شود. خواهان آسایش و پیشرفت بابل باشید و برای آن نزد من دعا کنید، چون آرامش آنجا آسایش شماست. آمین.
That was a bit louder than I was hoping it would be. If you haven't met me, my name's Nathan. I am not a part of the leadership team. I'm not a pastor. I'm not really qualified. Thank you. You stole my punchline. I read a lot, so I do consider it a real privilege to share a bit of what I read, and I'm very thankful that you're happy to listen. Well, that you listen. Hopefully you're happy. I'd like to start with a bit of a story. You might have heard the saying that you're only a couple of sort of bad calls away from heading out to the streets. And in my mid-20s, I really did feel like I had it all. I'd hit the ground running pretty hard straight out of uni, and quite quickly I'd had this solid resume, and I was told that I had a promising future. I was a youth leader, I was a musician in a large church, and I was a part of the in crowd, and there was a lot of social perks that came along with that. So maybe I should have paid a little more attention to Jesus' warnings against building our lives on the sand. Because out of almost nowhere, there was a betrayal by a close friend and some very bad decisions on my part, and suddenly I was looking for work, I was struggling to function with depression, and eventually I was only 1 week away from being homeless. So during this time, it was pretty tough, but God did display his provision for me in some really, really powerful ways. And just as importantly, he used that time to perform some deep heart surgery. In journeying through this time, God showed me how foolish I'd been to base my identity on fleeting things like, career or social status. I learned the hard way that a firm foundation for our lives comes from basing our identity in God's truth. And there's going to be other things that I can embrace and enjoy along the way, but I need to be very careful not to let those things become what I define myself by. So the reason I share this is because today's topic is about an identity that Scripture, I think, asks us to embrace, and it's not something that I'm going to talk about lightly. So this identity, it's all through Scripture, right from the very beginning of Genesis, but I'd like to first look at where Peter talks about it in his letter. He says, "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires, which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that, though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day that he visits us." So do you see it there? He's asking the church to take on this identity of foreigners and exiles, which is a bit odd, right? Because just like a lot of you here today, the people who were reading and listening to this letter, they probably grew up very close to where they were meeting for church. So they're in their hometown. Why was Peter calling them exiles? So there's a lot of history to where this idea of exile comes from and being an exile in your own land. But I'm going to condense like thousands of pages of Bible into like three sentences. Basically, a large portion of the Jewish people were taken into exile by the Babylonians. And then 100 years later, they were allowed to come home, but they were still under the power of that foreign authority, and at various times there were lots of restrictions placed on them. And as is often the case, after a traumatic experience, nothing was really the same for them. And as the prophets of the time reflected on what was going on and the state of the Jewish people, they realized because they were still under the foreign power, and because they were unable to worship God freely, they were still in exile, even though they were in their own land. So they had been exiled in place. But what they'd become was like an exile in time, because they were waiting to be fully delivered according to God's promises. So fast forward to Jesus' followers, and they found themselves starting to experience these amazing things as they became part of God's kingdom. But similarly, it was very frustrating because it was never fully getting realized. They still experienced persecution. They still experienced not being able to meet and worship God like they wanted to. And so they kept hold of this identity as an exile and kept hold of this hope that in the future, Jesus would return and there would be one final transformation of all creation. And as Jesus' followers today, we're still waiting for his return. And so in the same way, part of our identity is as exiles. As I've said this, some of you might be going, well, that's pretty easy. I know what it means to be in a foreign country and not able to return home. And for others of you who've made Sydney or Australia your home for a long time, maybe you think this is a bit strange. And either way, you're probably thinking, well, that's a really nice bit of theology, but how does that really affect us? Well, jumping back to the Jewish people as they were in their exile, as you can imagine, the turmoil in this time was really, really intense. And there were different factions that sprang up trying to convince the people that, you know, my idea is right. We should do this, we should do that. And just before today's passage in Jeremiah 28, we read that there was one group that said, we need to resist the Babylonians. They said, all the people have to do is rise up, and then God will break the Babylonians and free us. And then there was another group, and they said, well, obviously God has just abandoned us. Our temple is gone. There's nothing for us to do. We just have to conform. We just have to become Babylonian. That's it. So two options, resist or conform. And it can really feel like we have the same two options only today, right? Resist or conform. We're stuck in these cycles of issues blowing up, and then we get these two sides, and you just have to resist and conform, or resist and conform. And yet today, in this letter that Jeremiah wrote, we get this very current wisdom about a third way. And the third way has two parts. First is to be loyal and seek the welfare of where you found yourself. As Jeremiah wrote in verse 7, seek the welfare of the city where I've sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. And the second part of this third way is to maintain a deeper loyalty to God. In verses 5 and 6, we read, build houses and live in them, plant gardens and eat their produce, take wives and have sons and daughters, take wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, that they may bear sons and daughters, multiply there and do not decrease. So Jeremiah here is using a very common tactic that Jewish writers used, where he deliberately takes words from elsewhere in the Bible to make sure that ideas are flowing into what he's trying to say. He's trying to add extra meaning. So in this case, he adds extra meaning by using language from Genesis 1 and Deuteronomy 28. And in these passages, God is saying that I'm going to bless you if you're loyal. And so in these instructions, Jeremiah is saying, even though you're not in your land anymore, just keep living according to God's wisdom, and you'll still receive the same blessings as if you were at home. And so this deeper loyalty, it's going to sometimes mean going with the flow of the human powers where we find ourselves, but sometimes it might mean subverting them, where their claims to supremacy would have you act against God. So this third way, this mix of subversion and loyalty, sometimes it's called like the way of the exile, it's a very hard mix to get right, as you can appreciate, and we need to be constantly seeking God's wisdom to even have a chance. So that makes me think, we should be looking at Jesus, right? So in Jesus' time, you get the same tension. The Romans were the authority in power, and you had the tax collectors. And the tax collectors had conformed to the Roman way of doing things, and they were profiting off their own people. Then you had another group called the Zealots. And the zealots were always seeking and trying to start rebellions and throw the Romans out. Resist or conform. So then Jesus steps into this tension. And Jesus is willing to heal and teach everyone. He healed the Roman centurion's servant. He healed the women. He healed the powerful. He healed the weak. But then at the same time, he didn't let any authority escape being called out when they were acting against God's justice. Jesus is our ultimate example of following this third way. And I think if we look at his teaching, there are some real gems and challenges to help us navigate our time as exiles in Australia, modern Australia. So I think that we are very lucky in Australia, and it's quite easy to be loyal. There's a lot of just laws. The expectations that get put on us generally don't really conflict that much with our deeper loyalty to God. So I'd like to look at three cultural pressures that I think we need Jesus' help to subvert in our lives. So, please don't hear this as me saying you just need to drop everything and suddenly change your whole life. But if I do say something that sticks in your heart, then maybe just pray about it a bit and see if there's some small step you can take and rely on God's strength every step of the way. So the first pressure I think that we need to subvert is hyper-individualism and hyper-collectivism. So that is, life is either all about pursuing your own happiness, or life is all about giving yourself for the greater good. And depending on your background, you might have had pressure to conform to either, or if you're really unlucky, sometimes both, of these ways of living. So in our media, our Western media, often this idea of like the self-made man gets pushed, someone who just puts their head down and works super hard until they finally make it, and by their own strength, they finally have financial independence and control of their own destiny. Well, there's been a bunch of studies done, and the reality is there's a grimmer picture at play, as they've found that actually one of the highest risk groups of suicide is actually rich, middle-aged white men. These are people who have the most advantages, and hence they're most likely to have achieved this Western dream. And when they achieve it, they find it to be ashes, and that can lead them down a dark path. Or maybe you grew up in a more collectivist culture, where heavy expectations were put on you to conform to the group's ideas of success, regardless of your own individual strengths and ideas. Now, there are some Asian cultures where this features heavily, but I also regularly see it in Christian groups that push people to the point of burnout or guilt people into serving in areas they're not gifted in. And so Jesus speaks wisdom into this when he says, "Love your neighbor as yourself." You need to balance love both for yourself and for the greater community. And Jesus lived this out. His ministry, when you read about it, was this cycle of serving the needs of the crowd and then withdrawing and spending some time himself with God, with one-on-one time with his Father. This cycle of crowd and then alone time, taking care of himself, taking care of the crowd. So maybe like I was, you're caught up in advancing your career and chasing your dreams, and maybe you need to reprioritize a bit and dedicate some time to connect with the community here at West Ryde. Or maybe your whole life right now is this hectic mix of family commitments and ministry commitments, and it might be time to step back a bit and carve out some space to slow down and be still with your Father. So again, don't hear this as turning your life upside down, but if you feel this tugging at your conscience, maybe just start with some prayer and see where God leads you. So the second pressure I think that we need to subvert is consumer culture and the fear of missing out, you know, the dreaded FOMO. So there's a bunch of different paths that we could go down with this, whether it's how modern relationships seem to be becoming more and more transactional about what you can give and what you can take, or the fact that we're really bad at taking care of the environment, or that our modern culture seems to be pushing us to work harder and harder to try and afford bigger and better things. But what I'd like to dive into is something that I've been researching a bit lately, and it's a bit more subtle, and it's largely due to these things. So through our phones and the internet in general, our big business has found ways to make money from our time. And so billions of dollars of research has gone into getting us to consume as much media through our screens as possible. And as such, our culture has gone from one of kind of doing stuff in our free time to one of to continue to consume stuff in our free time. And one of the main tricks they use is this fear of missing out, FOMO. Whether it's making sure we're up to date with the latest, you know, hot Netflix series, or making sure that we know the latest hot take on the news that everyone's talking about, or keeping up with what everyone's posting on social media, our apps and our websites are really fine-tuned to tap into our FOMO and keep us online. So Jesus, believe it or not, does have some wisdom, I think, that speaks clearly into this. In Matthew 6, Jesus says, "Consider the flowers of the field, and don't worry." Because the thing about consumer culture and FOMO is that it relies on convincing us that there's not enough, that we're going to miss out. And Jesus says, just unplug, step outside, go for a walk in a field, and just see how much there is. And as we do this, we can start to appreciate that we live in this world of abundance with more than enough to meet everyone's needs, though maybe not enough to meet everyone's greed. It's kind of like God's invited us all to a party, and he promises that the food and drink will just keep flowing. We don't need to worry. We just got to take what we need and enjoy it. But some people have convinced themselves that this just isn't true, and things are going to run out. And so they start like taking the entree platters and like hoarding them in the study. And then other people see this and they start to worry, so they start taking their own platters and they start hoarding them in the pool room. And before you know it, you've got all these groups of people just fighting each other to keep their platters safe, when if they were just honest and open with each other, they'd see that there's plenty to go around. So as followers of Jesus, we can subvert this pressure, firstly by just trusting that God will provide our daily bread, which is what he's promised. So there's a couple of things that I like to do to try and help develop this abundance mindset. Firstly, I like to pray the Lord's Prayer every day, and I let that request for daily bread shape how I think about where my security comes from. And secondly, is to be generous with God, what God's provided to me. The prayer is, give us this day our daily bread. God provides enough for us, and it's on us to make sure that we're good stewards to get that bread where it's needed. And as we do this, our minds and hearts get transformed and our fear gets reduced as we get to see and appreciate God's provision for us every day. So the third pressure I think we need to subvert is that national interest is greater than human need. So this is the pressure that comes every time you get some politician or pundit saying something like, it's no good, I know it's not great, but we just have to act unjustly in this one area, otherwise, you know, the whole nation will suffer. And, you know, if you disagree, then you're really against the nation. And Jesus found himself in this exact same situation as people tried to trick him and tried to force him into one camp or another by asking him about taxes. They came to him and they said, should we pay taxes to Caesar? Now Jesus, in Jesus fashion, he replied to this question with a question. He grabbed a coin and he said, whose image is on this coin? And the group replied, Caesar. And then Jesus says a riddle. He says, so give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. So the question is, well, what's God's? We know from Jesus' question that, you know, what's Caesar's is what has Caesar's image on it. And we need to then ask, well, what has God's image on it? The Bible tells us that there's one thing with God's image on it. It's people. So it's fine to pay our taxes and obey laws and all the other things that come with living in a Western democracy. But as soon as Australia starts acting in a way that shows that they think they have the right to God's image bearers, then it's on us as Jesus' followers to set them straight. Two examples that I've been involved in, how Australia has treated asylum seekers and how Australia has treated Aboriginal people from European arrival all the way till now. In both these cases, Australia has dehumanized people in the name of political gain. And frankly, I think with issues like this, It's our time to be like Daniel standing up to Nebuchadnezzar or Jesus clearing the temple, where we need to raise our voices in protest against what the powerful are doing. Firstly, this means we have to take time to understand the issue. And then once we feel prepared, we're to be a witness of what God expects. Maybe this will just be to our friends, but depending on where God guides us, it might be to more powerful groups as well. So one final note on this. So I chose to highlight the national interest here, but this applies just as much to any powerful human structure. Maybe the multinational company where you work, or even a church that you find yourself in. So I suggest you drink some cups of tea and ponder this a bit more for your homework. So that's just a few things that have been on my mind lately, and I'm sure you'll have your own reflections. If there is something more, please tell me over a cup of tea. I'd like to hear from you. So say that we do really start taking this on board. We start taking on this identity of an exile, and we start living like this is our home, but it's really not our home, and that there is a future hope that we can hold on to and that will shape our lives. What can we expect to happen? So there's two things in Scripture, I think, that can shape our expectations. Firstly, we can expect that the powers of the world are going to get pretty confused, and that this could cause trouble for us. As Christians have acted with this ethic of the exile towards authorities, especially if we look at like the example of Paul, but there's a lot of other examples, they tend to get arrested in those stories, but they end up in limbo. Like Paul was in prison for a good 4 years before he finally said, got fed up and said, just take me to Caesar. And this is because the authorities, well, they feel the threat of the subversion, but because the Christians are sincerely seeking the well-being of the nation, because they are being loyal, the authorities can't really point to what that subversion is. So most likely, in Australia, we're not going to be arrested. Though, depending on where God leads you, you might be. But at the very least, we can expect some social pushback, as people do see our true loyalties and they might feel threatened by it. So that's the first thing we can expect, that we might get some pushback from the authorities. The second thing is that we can expect to have some really amazing experiences as, you know, God's kingdom is here. It hasn't been fully realized, but this is like, it is our home, but it's not our home. We're caught in this tension, and we're going to experience some amazing things that God and Jesus will do in partnership with us. And I'm sure many here have experienced this, but along with this, there's this like follow-up ache that kind of sits in your heart as life goes on and this tension of the exile keeps going. And Paul writes about this. He says in Romans 8, "We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth, right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, we groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies." So the ache, it's not always pleasant, but it is really good at keeping us heading in the right direction. And it does remind us of who we are right now. We're exiles waiting for Jesus to fulfill his promise, to make everything right, and show us our real home. As I was researching this, I came across this great C.S. Lewis quote where he talks about this. And he says, "For they," meaning the experiences of our future home, "are not the thing itself. They are only the scent of a flower we have not found. They're the echo of a tune we have not heard. They're news from a country we have never yet visited." So to finish the service today, instead of singing a song, I'd like to finish by playing a song for you to reflect on. And this is a song that gives me the echo of a tune I've not heard. It's called At My Table by a guy named Josh Garrels. In it, he's very artistically reflecting on a lot of what I've talked about today, about living in exile and the ache that comes when we feel the call of home. So just have a listen and a watch of this and see what it says to you. That line about my father running to me. Oof. always cracks me up. So thanks very much for listening in, and thanks very much for joining us in our service today. I hope you're encouraged by it. If you would like to give financially, a lot of people give electronically. There's also a green box in that corner where you can give cash. But there's no pressure if you're just a visitor. We're just very happy to have you. There will be morning tea and actual tea.